The Radio Memories Network is brought to you in part by Liberated Syndication, podcast publishing made easy, libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com.
Welcome once again to Big Band Serenade. It's where we meet every week to enjoy the music of the big band and to remember. So sit back and let's enjoy the memories of the big band era.
I'm Claire Teal. Welcome to Big Band Special. Tonight, the BBC Big Band and conductor Barry Forgy pay tribute to the musical legacy of Artie Shaw in this, his centenary year. Bandleader, clarinetist, composer, and true great of the swing era, his name will always be associated with sounds like this. The Hornet, composed for Artie Shaw by Buster Harding. Tonight, the BBC Big Band is joined by clarinet soloist Ian Dixon, who we heard there, along with Dave O'Higgins on tenor saxophone and Tom Rees-Roberts on trumpet. When Artie Shaw died on December the 30th, 2004, at the age of 94, a chapter in musical history was closed. The last survivor of the great swing-era bandleaders, his reputation remained undimmed. All the more amazing when you consider that he'd given up playing in 1954, leaving the music business behind for good. For Artie Shaw, music was one thing, business was quite another. Rose Room, composed by Art Hickman and a swing-era favourite, featuring Gerard Presenza on trumpet, along with Ian Dixon. That version of Rose Room was written for Artie Shaw by arranger Jerry Gray in 1938. Jerry had joined Artie Shaw when he put together his first band, Artie Shaw and His New Music, in 1936. This was a critical but not financial success and gave the jazz world its first clue that Artie Shaw held creativity in much higher regard than he ever would popular appeal. Jungle Drums, once again arranged by Jerry Gray and an early success for Artie Shaw, this time featuring Jay Craig on clarinet and Dave O'Higgins on tenor saxophone. Throughout his career as a band leader, Artie Shaw would form and disband his groups with alarming regularity, rivaled only by his enthusiasm for marriage. 8 in total. Whether you consider him a tortured soul or a serial malcontent, each of his bands would give valuable exposure to emerging talents. By the mid-1940s, young musicians, including guitarist Barney Kessel and arranger Buster Harding, were amongst the latest wave of recruits. Bedford Drive, written in 1945 by Buster Harding for Artie Shaw, with the solos coming from Ian Dixon on clarinet and Phil Robson on guitar. I'm Claire Teal, and you're listening to Big Band Special here on BBC Radio 2. Tonight, we're celebrating the music of Artie Shaw in this, his centenary year. Although Artie was greatly admired for the quality of his music, his personal reputation was quite different. Born Arthur Arshorsky in Manhattan, his first breakthrough came in New York's fledgling studio scene of the early 1930s. His clarinet playing had everything: tone, phrasing, technique and range. Yet even in those early days, he found himself dissatisfied with the music scene and left to run a farm in Pennsylvania. When the money ran out, he made his comeback in what would be the recurring theme of his career. the Richard Rodgers song My Heart Stood Still in the Artie Shaw version from 1938. 1938 was to be the year that Artie Shaw made his popular breakthrough with the Cole Porter song Begin the Begin. Artie asked Jerry Gray to make an arrangement which included the now famous introduction written, as Jerry later recalled, to catch the attention of the dancers. Begin the Begin, featuring Ian Dixon on clarinet and Dave O'Higgins on tenor. The success of Begin the Begin propelled Artie Shaw into the public spotlight in a way that he wasn't entirely comfortable with. His band was constantly recording and broadcasting as well as performing, but whilst the money and adulation rolled in, there would be regular outbursts in the press in which Artie would refer to his adoring fans as morons. Exhausted by the band's relentless schedule, Artie Shaw once again announced he was leaving the music business and escaped to Mexico. The Carioca, one of Artie Shaw's last hits with his 1939 band before his Mexican sojourn. This lasted all of 2 months while he jammed with Mexican musicians, got bored, and broke his knee in five places. In early 1940, Artie returned to New York, ready to form a new band and pick up where he'd left off, with Hollywood and its starlets beckoning. Glider, written by Buster Harding and Count Basie, and another big hit for Artie Shaw. The first half of the 1940s was an eventful period in Artie Shaw's life. As well as his big band, he formed the small group Artie Shaw and his Gramercy Five. In 1942, he enlisted in the US Navy and led a band, including many of his regular players, all over the Pacific. Suffering from exhaustion, he was discharged from the Navy in 1944 and soon reformed his own band. Amongst the lineup were trumpeter Roy Eldridge and a young trombonist and arranger by the name of Ray Conniff.
Oh,
wonderful, in Ray Conniff's celebrated arrangement for Artie Shaw, featuring Ian Dixon on clarinet, Jim Watson on piano, and Dave O'Higgins on tenor saxophone. After Jerry Gray had moved on from Artie Shaw to Glenn Miller in the early 1940s, Ray Conniff's talents proved to be invaluable. As well as his arrangements, he wrote some originals, including Jumping on the Merry-Go-Round. Ray Conniff's Jumping on the Merry-Go-Round, written in 1945 for Artie Shaw and played there by the BBC Big Band. The solos came from Ian Dixon once again on clarinet, Jim Watson on piano and Phil Robson on guitar. Artie Shaw wrote a number of his own hits in the 1940s in partnership with George Siravo. Siravo, who went on to work with Frank Sinatra in the 50s, was responsible for this one, entitled Let's Walk. Let's Walk, featuring Ian Dixon on clarinet and Tom Rees-Roberts on trumpet. Throughout his career, Artie Shaw was plagued by the constant comparisons made by the press and public to that other clarinet-playing bandleader, Benny Goodman. Although he claimed to be above such trivia, Artie would often talk about little else during interviews. One of their most famous exchanges involved Artie accusing Benny Goodman of being too hung up on the clarinet. Goodman couldn't see what was wrong with this as they both played the instrument. Artie's reply summed up his mindset perfectly. "I'm trying to play music, Benny." Just floating along. Another George Siravo and Artie Shaw collaboration featuring Ian Dixon on clarinet along with Simon Finch on trumpet and Jim Watson at the piano. When Artie Shaw decided to give up music for good in 1954, few believed it would be permanent. After all, he'd walked away a number of times in the past and still come back. Latterly, he'd been moving in new musical directions and exploring bop. But no matter how strong his desire to develop his art, he still couldn't face an endless round of reprising all his old hits for what he called a racket ridden with every manner of vulgarity. After burning his bridges, Artie Shaw decided to write books, not music, and for the rest of his long life was a lucid, if opinionated, commentator on the state of jazz. Just as Sing 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 epitomised Benny Goodman's music, so Artie Shaw's Concerto for Clarinet summed up his musical being. Thank you. Concerto for Clarinet, composed by Artie Shaw and performed tonight by our wonderful soloist Ian Dixon, along with the BBC Big Band, conducted by Barry Forgy. And that, I'm afraid, is all we have time for. I'll be back with the BBC Big Band next week in session with conductor Jigs Wiggum and music by John Clayton, Thad Jones and Jörg Keller. That's Big Band Special, just after 11 next Monday here on BBC Radio 2. And don't forget that you can catch tonight's show anytime you choose over the next 7 days by going to the BBC iPlayer. But for now, from me, Claire Teal, and my producer, Bob McDowell, thanks for listening and bye for now.
BBC Radio 2 in concert.
If you love the thrill of a sweaty mosh pit, or you enjoy your music up close and personal, then this is your kind of show.
And a bit of noise from Radio 2 listeners.
Every Thursday night, BBC Radio 2 celebrates the best in live music.
Welcome along to the home of live music here on Radio 2, the in-concert programme.
I'm Joe Wiley, and this week's headliner is the amazing Jack Johnson. Also round up what's happening on the UK's live music scene with the Gig Guide. BBC Radio 2 in concert. Thursday night from 8.
This is BBC Radio 2 online, on digital and on 88 to 91 FM. BBC News at midnight. This is Fran Godfrey. President Obama has said that he hopes to have an agreement in place with BP by Wednesday on a compensation fund for people affected by the huge oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. He'll meet executives from the company for the first time then. Mr. Obama says he expects BP to pay into an independent trust fund.
We have begun preliminary conversations about how do we structure a mechanism so that the legitimate claims that are going to be presented are dealt with justly, fairly, promptly.
The new independent watchdog that makes economic forecasts has said that spending on public sector pensions will more than double in the lifetime of this parliament. The Office for Budget Responsibility believes the cost could rise to £9 billion by 2014. Our political correspondent Ian Watson is in Westminster.
Because of demographic reasons, as they call it, in other words, because more public sector workers are set to retire in the next 4 years, and because they're also expected to live longer when they do, then those costs are likely to go up. The coalition government's going to be taking a look at this. They're going to be announcing a review of public sector pensions.
A disciplinary hearing, which is being held by the General Medical Council, has heard how a GP missed a unique opportunity to save baby Peter Connolly 8 days before he died in August 2007. The GMC was told that Dr. Jerome Igweke, who's 63, failed to carry out an adequate examination or refer the child for further checks, even though he knew baby Peter was on the at-risk register. The Defence Secretary Liam Fox has said that a review into the military will be carried out ruthlessly and without sentiment. He's promising a leaner and more efficient Ministry of Defence, and he also said there had to be a rethink on the role of the armed forces. But in a speech in London, Dr. Fox gave no details on what equipment programmes are likely to be cut. The Conservative MP, Bernard Jenkin, who sits on the Commons Defence Select Committee, says the UK must decide what role it wants on the world stage.
Do we want this defence review to be an East of Suez moment where we permanently reduce our military capability forever?